Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Can I talk to you about toilet rolls, please?
If you must.
Yeah. So I live in a house with four children, three of whom are teenagers, one of whom's away at the moment, but, you know, it's still the same effect. I think something happens to them when they go into the toilet because their hands don't work when the loo roll runs out. So they don't seem able to replace it. And then if they do actually manage to put a new one on, they just toss the cardboard inner to the floor somewhere. It's near bin.
Yes.
It's in the bin.
Yes, we have that all the time. And the other thing they do is they come and steal the loo roll out of my bathroom. Yeah. And then you're on the toilet, reach it, and you're like, oh, for God's sake. And you knew it was there this morning.
And God forbid you would be the only person in the house with a teenager, because they won't come in the bathroom for you to give you another toilet roll, will they? Because
they'd be definitely not.
Horrified and shocked. You'd die there like Bridget Jones, wouldn't you? You'd die on the loo waiting for someone to replace
it. A sad, lonely death on the toilet.
It's infuriating. Anyway, that's how my new year is going so far, Trish.
Lovely. Lockdown new year. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife. I'm Trish Halpin.
And I'm Lorraine Candy. And we're on a mission to help you make the most of your magnificent midlife. We'll be tackling everything from mind and body wellness to HRT and your sex drive. Trish and I are here to help you have a stylish second act and answer all your midlife questions on fashion, beauty, careers, relationships, family, and as always, the challenges and joys of parenting teens. Welcome everyone to Postcards from Midlife 2021, and hello to all our new listeners, especially those who are joining us from all the corners of the globe.
Yes, we want to say a big thank you to the wonderful midlife women who are sending us messages from as far away as Canada, Hong Kong, Australia and America. It's lovely to get to know you all on our Facebook group and via our Instagram, and I assure you we do personally read all of the messages.
Yes, our community is wonderfully supportive and it's expanding. I'm really proud to start 2021 knowing we are making life a little less complicated and a little less stressful for other women tackling those midlife health and happiness dilemmas. Anyway, on with the show today, and we've got a corker for you, haven't we, Trish?
We have.
Now, if you thought I was straight talking Trish, wait until you meet our guest. Mm-hmm. She is the beauty guru and midlife influencer, Caroline Hirons.
Yes, I'm really excited about this one because we're going to be delving deep into the tricky challenges of mothering teenagers with Caroline, who has four children aged 16 to 29. So she has seen it all and in the process become one of the most influential women in the beauty world.
Yeah, well, we seem like amateur parents in comparison, quite frankly. Now, today we are also going to be going into what I call beast mode. I love that word, Josh. And discussing how to harness your fear when you hit your midlife. How can you use your fears to parachute yourself out of your comfort zone and make the most of every day?
And for our How to Win at Midlife section, we're going to be looking at the questions you should ask yourself about relationships after 40. And it's time to find out if you're in a romantic rut. Is that you, Lorraine? Perhaps?
I don't know. I think I should rather not say. Hopefully I won't be after our chat about small changes you can make in a marriage or relationship when you reach your 40s and 50s to keep it healthy and happy. It's like you and Neil looking at the goldfinches in the garden.
It's the goldfinches, but it's also we've been watching Bridgerton together. Which is an interesting thing to do with your other half.
Is it?
It's quite frisky.
Do you have to sit apart on the sofa? Just in case things take a turn.
Well, we tend to sit one end of the sofa leaning sort of the opposite way, but his hand did reach across during one of the episodes.
Did he say, put some clothes on, woman?
Get your corset back on.
Now, as you know, Trish, I am a little sceptical of self-help books in general. And actually, one of my pet hates on this front is this mantra, feel the fear and do it anyway, which I think is a bit of a ridiculous phrase. I don't really know what it means. But in midlife, I have been thinking a little bit more about fear and how to handle it. I think you become more sensitive to all your emotions in midlife. And especially as we've been living through these unpredictable and probably quite fearful times. So I do think that fear is an extremely powerful and useful emotion, don't you, Trish?
Well, I do. And I think, you know, to your point about self-help books, I know you're not a super fan, but you just have to look at the amount of them out there that are about fear, vulnerability, to kind of know that they're obviously, it's a huge part of everybody's emotional and sort of psychological makeup. But the key thing is, as you're kind of saying, is how do you, first of all, recognize what your fears are, understand them, and then harness those fears and get on with stuff, I think. What are you afraid of, Lorraine?
I think I would be a good person on a desert island because I'm not physically fearful of much, really.
Not spiders, the phobia side of things.
Oh, I don't care about spiders.
None of that. I'm not bothered about that.
No, I'm not bothered about that. But what I am a little frightened of is being alone. So I have this thing I do when occasionally when I think, oh my goodness, what if something happens? I mean, I actually don't really like being alone on my own doing things. Anyway, I think that's because I need an audience. But what I do is it's like a to-do list. I take myself back to the times when I've been on my own and I've done something really fearless. And then I was thinking about this knowing we were talking about it. So I came to London I was just 17 on my own. Found a job, got myself into journalism, worked on a local paper. So that was something I did on my own. So it's not, why is it a fear now? Because I've done that on my own. I gave up a full-time job to go freelance, which was kind of the beginning of my career in journalism. I was on a local paper, so I just gave up the job and decided that I would go freelance. And then I got a job on a national paper, and that's when my career began. I did some really big stories as a news journalist. I once went to America on a drugs bust with the DEA to cover it. I was covering it for the BBC and for the Daily Mirror at the time. And I just did that on my own. And I must have been about 21, 22. And I just think of those times when I've done things on my own where I would have been a bit fearful of how that was, not fearful of failing, fearful of actually doing it. So I'm not scared of kind of anything physically, but I am a little bit fearful of that. So I think you have to, you read around your fear, don't you? And then remember the times when you've conquered it and it spurs you on. Does that work for you, Trish?
Yeah, I think it does, because I think as women, we're socialised as children to be afraid, aren't we? Because, as girls particularly, because all things parents tell their children, socialise them, that they should, you know, for girls, it's like, you have to be terrified. You have to go out and you have to fear the worst, that something's going to happen to you. Obviously, we want our children to be careful. We want our daughters in particular to be careful. And, you know, that means we do things as women, isn't it? We're really careful if we're walking home from the dark. We wouldn't go out for a run at night. All of those things that make you physically fearful.
Which men aren't frightened of.
They're not frightened of. It's that really amazing Margaret Atwood quote, isn't there? Which she says, men are afraid that women will laugh at them. Women are afraid that men will kill them.
Exactly.
So there's that kind of the physical side that I think lives within us as women. But then to your point, it's more about your fears, your vulnerabilities, the things like loneliness, things like aging, perhaps people might be afraid of. Fear of success. I think women can be a bit fearful of success because it ties into that, you know, the idea of being judged. And, you know, the more successful you are, the more sort of out there you are, the more exposed you are, and the more judged you are. So I think sometimes there's a potential to kind of, well, limit your potential, in fact, because
what do you do then to get over your fears?
Well, I read this thing a while ago and I found it helpful, is that you, first of all, you define your fears, because otherwise it can end up in a bit of a jumble, can't you? Just like, I'm feeling anxious and I'm feeling fearful and I don't know what it is. So if you kind of work through it and define what those fears are, and then you do a bit of a reality check like you did, where you say, okay, what's the reality about this? You take each one and you say, what is the reality about this? Would this really happen? If I did find myself in this situation, how would I respond? So you're giving yourself practical tools, aren't you, to deal with the fear if it should so happen come to life.
Do you read books? I've got a few of the...
Go on.
My warrior women on the fear front. So
then
you'll know who these are. So obviously Oprah.
Yes.
Everything she writes, all the podcasts, very good on fear. Esther Perel is very good on fear. Brené Brown.
Yes.
And then my new one, I love her, Glennon Doyle.
Yes, you've mentioned her a couple of times. She's having an impact on you.
She is having an impact, but she's very good on fear, anxiety, bravery, and that kind of thing. I guess the only time I've come close to panic with fear is, do you remember when you have your first baby and you come home from the hospital and you put them on, and we had her in the car seat and we put her on the floor, and I just was overwhelmed with fear, thinking, what the hell will happen if I can't, knowing it was my responsibility to feed her, breastfeed her. What will happen if we can't feed? This is another life. This is not a cat or a dog. It's not Margot or Pixel. This is that. That is a time I remember great fear. But then I guess once you've done that once, it's not so fearful the next time, is it? I fear death and loss quite a lot sometimes. I'm keen on the death maths.
Your death maths, yes, exactly.
Very existential. And mortality, my own mortality. Mm-hmm. There's a load of books. YouTube is particularly brilliant, actually, for people talking about fear and all the TED Talks. Is there anything that you've
As you say, Brené Brown, she's done a lot of TED Talks, but there is a documentary on Netflix called The Call to Courage. She is really good because she gives you these kind of tools you need to think about things in a bit of a different way. And you're talking about your death maths. She talks about like getting to the end of our lives and asking yourself, what if I would have shown up, in that very American way, showing up. So what would it, what would my life have been like if I hadn't been held back by fear and vulnerability? And she's also very interesting, I think, on shame, and how women experience shame very differently, and how to actually change our behaviours in more effective ways for handling anxiety. There was also a podcast called Do It Scared by Ruth
Back to Bridgerton again.
Do It Scared. Ruth Soukup, Soukup, and that's about facing fears and overcoming adversity. But you know what? A bit of Bear Grylls, I think, is quite
good. I love Bear Grylls.
He takes people right out of their comfort zones. Yep. He talks about his own fear and anxiety. And it's like watching those programs like I'm a Celebrity. The one this time really made me laugh with that lovely Jordan North, who was absolutely, couldn't even like get past getting out.
He was sick at the top of the cliff, wasn't he?
Just as he got out of the car before he even started. But all his like, I'm in my happy place. And seeing, able to see how people deal with their fears like that on TV, I think is really interesting.
So I do that with my open water swimming. It's one of the reasons I carried on doing it. I had a bit of a panic attack in a lake when I first learned to swim because I couldn't really swim properly. And I thought, I don't like this. I'll overcome this. I'll keep going back in till I overcome it. And one of the things they teach you in very cold water when your heart almost stops and you can't breathe, because it takes away the ability to breathe very cold water, is to have a mantra. So in that moment when you're frightened, and my mantra is, I am at ease. And I just have to say it about three times. And obviously the nervous system recognizes it now. It's a kind of practiced thing. But actually, when you're fearful in other situations, I often say I am at ease. And it's like it's a physiological thing that kicks in. It's like a program in my brain now. So that, I think, is quite a helpful thing to do. And also learning to breathe properly is really good.
Yeah.
I talk to a lot of teenagers about this, learning to take three big breaths that start from right in your stomach and expand your chest, and then everything slows down.
But obviously, if you have fears that you really feel that you cannot overcome, you've tried some of these techniques, you've read the books, you've watched the TED Talks, etc., it is worth obviously speaking to your GP. Finding out about some CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, because that's very, very effective for fears. And then I found a good website called mentalhealth.org, which has some really good advice and connections for overcoming fear and anxiety.
And I think one of the reasons we are talking about this now is there was a post on our Facebook group where a lady talked about how she was absolutely fine, and then suddenly when she hit her mid-40s and experienced perimenopausal symptoms, became very frightened of things, frightened of getting into a car. Really inexplicable fear, which is, I've read about and heard about many times from women in midlife on the groups that I'm on, and actually from some of the experts we've interviewed. So I think if you're in that place, then you may need some professional help, because it's part of the hormone decrease, but it is easily overcome if you get the right support.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And now it's time to meet our guest. Businesswoman Caroline Hirons is a 51-year-old mum of four children aged 16 to 29. The down-to-earth mega blogger began her career on the beauty counter at Harvey Nicks 23 years ago. You magazine crowned her the most powerful woman in beauty last year, and her book, Skincare, The Ultimate No-Nonsense Guide, is a number one bestseller. In fact, millions of women regularly watch her beauty videos, but we're here to talk to her about her midlife journey and the perfect storm of parenting teens.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife, Caroline.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I have been a fan of yours for a long time because you just say what lots of people are afraid to say. You just say it straight. Most of your stuff is rooted in science. It's very practical and you have a very realistic attitude to everything. But I think I'm a bigger fan of your parenting, actually, because you've lived through four teenagers and you've got a granddaughter who's 4 months old. So I thought it might be good for our listeners to take you back to the beginning. Tell us about that first teenage with Ben. What was that like?
Probably not the sort of best example, actually, because Ben was not a perfect child, but just a really, really good kid. All of my kids have struggled with school, not from an educational standpoint, from the sort of always wanting to be more inquisitive and sort of speaking up. I can't think where they get it from. Shocking.
No.
But in terms of, you know, his personality, it was nothing out of the ordinary, the usual sort of grumpy. But I do think there is something in the fact that he was a boy. I think boys are different with their mums as teenagers.
So you're 51 now. How old were you when he was, say, 13, 14 then?
34, 35. I was 22 when I had Ben.
So that's quite young to be dealing with a teenager. Was there no shock? Because they're quite nice in their childhood after the baby bit to the teenage bit. I suppose at 35, you're not too far away from being a teenager yourself in your mind. You can remember it well.
Yeah, and I think I always have empathy for teenagers because you do remember what it was like. You know, it's not the best time of your life, let's face it. The biggest stress for me with my children has always been around school, getting the right school, and are they happy at school? And that's for me been the biggest stress as a parent, like continuous stress.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of, oh God, we've got to apply for the schools. And of course, I've had four children across 15 years. The rules were different with each kid. The advice on how you feed a baby was different with each kid. The school application was different almost with each kid. So everything has almost been a different learning experience. In my experience, boys are softer on their mum than teenage girls, who are satanic.
Now, when you look back at your life story, though, you've gone through quite a lot of what I would call, I suppose, challenging and slightly traumatic events in many ways. So your mum was diagnosed with cancer when you were 14. You have had three miscarriages during your maternal life. Maybe take us back, because so our listeners get the background on it, on your early 20s and who you were before you started your family at 22.
That's a good question. I'm not entirely sure. To be honest, I was always looking for someone to start a family with. That's how I wanted to start my life. I always had it in my head that I would have two kids before I was 25.
Really?
My husband calls me
unusual for this generation.
My husband calls me a ridiculous type A person. It's like, you take it too far. But I did. I had two kids before I was 25.
You had and a job, so, though, at the time, because you were training.
I've always worked. I've worked since I was 15. The only time I didn't work is sort of during the late pregnancy months.
Yeah.
I was always just kind of working, ready to settle emotionally, never ready to settle work-wise, always trying to see what else I could achieve or what else I could do. Or, you know, the ambition there is kind of borderline psychotic, let's face it. I knew I wanted to have children and, you know, I was lucky enough to be able to. So never taking it for granted.
And then you met Jim then. So he must have been in agreement with that, having kids so young.
Well, I was 19. He's 6 years older than me. Right. So he was 25. When we had Ben, he was 28. Definitely ready to have kids. And I think that's why we kind of came together. We both had the same sort of vision, I suppose.
Were you financially up to dealing with kids at that age? Because 22 is quite... No.
No. You're never up to
people
dealing
always
with kids
say,
financially,
don't they?
Let's face it.
When's the right time to have children? And you could say when you can afford it. But actually, there's no right time, is there?
No, and especially when you live in London. You know, the fact that we've raised four children in central London was miraculous to me. You know, it's only since I started working for myself sort of 10 years ago that we've been able to not borrow from parents regularly. If you wait for the right time, I don't think you'll ever have kids.
And being a parent of older children are older than teenagers. Well, you've got teenagers and you've got kids in their 20s and you're a grandmother. What's it like being a parent of a proper grown-up who's out there living their own lives?
Interesting. Weirdly enough, my two older boys, because we had two boys, then we had a gap, and then we had Ava and Max. And Ben and Dan are far more vocal and angsty with me at their current age than they were at teenager years. Mm. So, you know, I try and say to them, I know in my head that the saying is, when your children are younger, you're a manager, and as they get older, you become a consultant. And I try to say to them, I'm just trying to be a consultant. And they're like, I don't need you as a consultant. I'm like, okay, all right, I'm just gonna put the kettle on then. Whereas with Max, I'm very much a manager. You know, you don't get to consult with me. You're 16. Shut up and bring your dishes down. We're a really close, tight-knit family. All the kids are each other's best friends. We're kind of like impenetrable in a healthy way and yet opening and warm, because obviously I have a daughter-in-law and we have a granddaughter. And so she just gets treated like one of mine. And I've known her since she was a kid. So that's helpful. But she knew what she was getting, put it that way.
Mm-hmm. And what's it like having a baby in the dynamic once again? Because those years can feel really far behind. Once you get to teenagers, you can't even remember the baby days.
It is the best thing ever. I read something that said, grandchildren are God's repayment to you for living through the teen years.
True that, yeah.
True that. And it is, you know, I have people saying, oh, you're going to tell people you're a grandmother, you know, aren't you? I'm like, why would I be ashamed of being a grandmother? I'm only 51, you know. It's like, my mum was a grandmother at 44. So she is an absolute dream. It's the best. And of course, you can hand them back. The only difficulty is, of course, not overstepping the mark, because you've been there and you've done it. I had to say to my son at one point, oh, stop moaning, please. Wait till you got four. And he's like, that's never going to happen. You know, because they've never known what it's like to be sleep deprived.
No, it's quite a shock for, I guess they're millennials, aren't they? You're older too. It's quite a shock for millennials, I think, sometimes to be sleep deprived and, you know,
they're like,
not in charge of their time.
He'll say things like, oh, she went down at 11 and she was awake at 5. I'm like, babe, that's sleeping through the night.
That's amazing.
One of the things that you've talked about, which I love, and you do it on your social media and in your videos, which I think is really healthy and it's really inspiring for people, is that you have never really felt guilty for working when your children have been growing up. And you've worked very hard for everything, you know, run your own business. But when I hit about 45, I started to really think back through my working career. And I've got four kids and we had a nanny who looked after them while we both worked. And I look at moments sometimes and I think, God, maybe I should have been there. But I've never felt guilty, but I started to feel guilty before I had a word with myself at that middle point in life. Did you ever have those moments in your midlife, in your 40s, when you thought, have I done this right? Have I done this wrong?
No. Just a blanket no. I know that Jim and I have done our best job. I know that we've been as open as we can with the kids. I know that, you know, we have four children who know they can say absolutely anything to us, and they do, trust me, to the point where sometimes I have to go, all right, calm myself. I don't do guilt. You know, there's the odd thing where you think, oh, I forgot that it was school picture day or things like that. But that could happen if I was at home looking after the kids, you know, not just because I'm at work. The kids know as well. You know, I think the best example I can set them is to show someone who's trying to live their best life, working their ass off and stands up for what she thinks is right, says no, doesn't say yes to everything. Like, those are the kind of things I want my kids to pick up on. And I think they have, almost to too strong an extent in some of my children.
It's quite a robust self-esteem, though. I guess, is that from your mothering, from the mothering you got?
All I got from my mum was pretty much unconditional love, like 24/7. And I know, sadly, how that's not common practice. I mean, if I stabbed Jim, my mum would say, well, he must have done something to deserve it, love. I've always known that if everything went tits up, I could move home. Even now with four kids, if it all went tits up, I could go, yeah, mum, you better move the dining room. We're coming home. She doesn't have the same self-esteem, so she worries for me. And that kind of winds me up, because I see it as her trying to undermine me. And she's not at all. She's just trying, as a mum, her instinct is to, oh, be careful. you know. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. What are you worried about? What's wrong with you? I learned from you. You were the one who would go onto the shop floor and say X, Y, Z and da, 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 da. So I think that as she's got older, she's obviously mellowed, doesn't have to be quite so forceful or strong in that way. But emotionally strong, yeah, I come from a line of strong women for sure.
And do you see that in your daughter?
She's a psycho.
This is the time to explore the teenage girl versus teenage boy dynamic with mums.
She would be the first to admit it too. My mum said that someone asked her, my godmother, who's been my mum's best friend since they were three, asked her what Ava was like earlier on. And my mum said, she's like Caroline, but more. My godmother apparently went, oh God. And it is, it's like my mum was forceful. I'm me and Ava is another level. I mean, I'm kind of impressed, but also I do the thing that my mum does, which is, oh, don't go too hard, but like, be careful. She's like, well, I'm fine. I think, oh.
But girls are a bit meaner, I think. And that's because they kind of, they have to reject more of mum than they do of dad. So they have to be meaner to you to separate from you. How do you deal with that meanness? Because it's hard, isn't it? You've got to pick your battles with teenage girls. Otherwise, you'd be in a permanent conflict situation.
It's much better now. Ava's 19, but the years, so I'm like 14 to 16, I could have killed her on at least a weekly basis, if not more often.
I used to feel ashamed of those feelings, though, when I thought I'm going to kill them. I used to think this is a terrible thing for a mother to feel about a teenage child.
No, I say to her, you absolute bitch. You say that to me again, I'm going to knock you the fuck out. Like, that's the kind of comment. And she would be like, you're so mean. I'm going to tell dad. I'm like, you tell dad. Let's see what if he knows what side his bread is buttered on, shall we? You go after. You try and come between me and dad. Like, that's the kind, you know. Now, I'm like, oh, yeah, why don't you just go ask dad? And he's like, why are you bringing me into this? Don't, because he'll just give her anything. I mean, she's the princess.
Yeah, it's difficult because sometimes you do have very negative feelings about them when they're behaving like that. And you can sometimes think, oh, God, I just don't like them at the moment. It's really conflicting as a parent, isn't it, to kind of recognise your children's faults as well as their strengths. How do you manage that?
Well, with Ava in particular, I've always just been open with her. As much as I say they can say anything they want to me, I expect them to let me have the same opportunity. Mm-hmm. I've said to her, look, I love you. I would die for you. But if you talk to me like that again, I'm going to knock you the fuck out, bitch. Mm-hmm. Like, literally. And then she'd be like, you're so rude. And then she'd slam doors, but she knew she was wrong. Key thing here with girls, and let's not forget, let's not let them get away with this. Girls know how to push your buttons way more than boys.
Well, they've been watching you since they were born.
They know exactly what they are doing.
So there's no sulking in your family?
No, you'd never get away with sulking in our family. You'd get the piss ripped out of you. The sort of closest relationship I see that sort of mirrors the way I am with my kids is Sharon Osbourne and her kids. Like, open swearing, open banter, but the love, you can feel the love through the TV when you're watching it. Like, they know if anyone came for them, I would kill for them. I would die for them. You know, everyone would. But that's how any parent feels. But we're passionate people. And with that, you get, why are you being such a dick? You know, it's that kind of. And the irony is, you know, my mother never swore in the house. My parents never swore in the house, never swore at me. Never once. I think my mum once slapped me around the face and I'm sure I deserved it.
With Ava then, you've not had that fear that I think a lot of mums of teenage girls have, that there may be an eating disorder in the waiting, that she might be suffering from anxiety, all the things we're kind of bombarded or told may be risky for our teenage girls, perhaps more so than boys. You've never had that trickling through your mind that you couldn't deal with that or that was a risk?
I don't look to the media for how I should raise my kids.
Yeah.
I go by my own instinct. We've certainly had instances where she was a teenager and she'd say, God, I'm so fat. And I would say to her immediately, no, you're not. You're gorgeous. What are you talking about? Look at you. And I'd make her stand in front of a mirror and just hold her body and go, look at you. And I'm sure that's down to just good luck. You know, I have friends who've had children who are anorexic and I know there's nothing you can do as a parent to prevent it. Teenage girls get such a bad rap, but in my experience, they're all very, very supportive of each other. There's no sort of slagging each other off the way we did when we were teenagers in the 80s. You know, oh, she's no slag. On social, it's much more the comments underneath their Instagram pictures are always like, bae, and you're so hot, and this kind of thing. So I've never had that concern, no.
And what about your phenomenal success and this phenomenal personal brand that you've built up, Caroline, and your influence in the beauty world is just really to be applauded. How have your family reacted to that? They've been there watching you build it and do it, and to see you with your millions of followers and on TV and writing top-selling books and things.
Well, they tell me they're really proud. I mean, when I got the CEW award, I took two tables full of people, because my family is one table, because there's six of us plus my brother and that kind of thing. And then I took my team on the other table. All the kids were there, all proud as punch and screaming and shouting in a way that's very, very unlike CEW events.
That's because cosmetic executive women, isn't it? CEW.
Yes, right. It was like getting an Oscar, a beauty Oscar. Mm-hmm. I think they're very proud of me, because also I'm very aware of not betraying their confidence online. I don't talk about them negatively online. People know I had issues with Ava, but never the ins and outs or that, just the general, oh my God, teenagers, that kind of generalizing. Anytime I've put anything up that they weren't happy with, if they said, can you take this down? I take it down immediately. I've always had that respect for them. I respect them as individuals. I just won't be bullied by them.
What's your schedule then? Because it looks to me from outside kind of relentless. Do you get up very early, do it, and then spend time with the family? Or do you have the kind of, we have to have family meals? What are your kind of daily schedule then? Because I just wonder how you fit it all in.
Since lockdown, it's sort of been easier in a way because I'm at home all the time. Without lockdown, there's certainly been a good period where I was building the blog and working with clients. Yeah. Where they would sort of say, you're not listening to me, put your phone down, because I was just 24/7 on my phone, looking downwards, holding my phone. You know, the way that normal parents would talk to their teenagers, it's the other way around with me. And so I've definitely had to listen to them and say, I'm sorry, what were you saying? You know, and then of course I got diagnosed with ADHD last year. So that helped me realize that actually I wasn't ignoring them. It's just that my brain was already taken up.
How are you managing?
And I always, medication, thank God.
How to avoid burnout then? How do you, to use the hideous phrase self-care, how do you manage your stress, looking after yourself?
I'm good at saying no. I could easily be much busier than I am. I say no to 99% of things I'm asked to do. Mm-hmm. My self-care is saying no and having really strong boundaries, like, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, my work is my life, so I don't see it as work. I just see it as what I'm doing with my life, if that makes sense.
Yes,
and the kids know that. The kids know that and the kids see that. And if something is too taxing, then I just don't do it again. Mm-hmm. It's really simple. You know, if something's been too much, I'm just like, oh, I'm not doing that again. The kids and Jim would be the first people to say, you're knackered, you need to stop. Or this is taking too much of your time. Is it worth it? You know, that kind of thing. And I always take their advice because they're the ones who have to live with me.
You don't drink, do you?
No, I did drink at Christmas time. Lockdown drove me to it. But no, I'm not. I drink like champagne or Prosecco if I'm feeling cheap on occasion.
You really kind of, what you put in your body, really healthy in it on a day-to-day?
No. I don't eat a load of crap. I just watch what I eat, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
People talk about weight and things. I always think, well, I could weigh a lot more if I really ate the way I wanted to. You know, I had to really check my sort of diet, and I don't mean like dieting, but what I ate when menopause hit. I remember watching something, it was a female gynecologist, and I just saw it repeated, basically saying that alcohol is the worst thing that menopausal women can drink.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, well, I haven't drunk for a while anyway, and there's obviously a reason why I naturally moved away from it.
Yeah.
And so that was just easy. I don't need it. One glass of champagne too many, and you've just
been
like crap for 2 days. I mean, when I was 17, 18, 19 and working in HMV in London, we would go to gigs after work, go to the after show party, stay out all night drinking, and then go straight back into work the next day in the same clothes. That would put me in hospital these days.
Yes, exactly. So that brings us to midlife, menopause. You are brilliant on HRT. You mention it all the time. And I think you were one of the few people who mentioned it over the years.
Yeah.
What was your menopause journey? When did you begin to think I should get this sorted out?
Well, I thought I'd need to get this sorted out around 2016, 2017, because I piled on weight and I wasn't really eating more. I mean, I was craving things like carbs more, which I now know is classic perimenopause. I had no idea. I just didn't know, you know?
Had you heard the phrase even before? Because we hadn't heard the phrase until our doctors,
My skin started to change around 40. I started getting acne and things like that. And that's what kind of changed my direction of career as well. And that's why I ended up going back in and retraining in skincare. So that was interesting, you know, having to sort out your skin when you're 40. But now I know it's one of the most common complaints to women over 40. Onset allergies and acne, and they're linked. Out of nowhere, I got a shellfish allergy. Out of nowhere. I was raised in the South in America. All we ate was shellfish, you know. I just kind of thought, hang on a minute. you can't keep buying a size bigger in clothes and not do something about it. You know, it was when I was looking at clothes and thinking, because I'm already really tall and I have a really big, heavy build.
That's the surprising thing about you, isn't it? When people meet you, they say, oh my gosh, she's so much taller in real life.
Yeah, because when you're sitting on a camera, you just look normal. I'm 5'10". I used to be 5'11", but after Max, my feet went a size bigger and I shrunk an inch. So I am shrinking with old age, literally.
Did you go to your GP?
Yeah, I went to my GP initially and said, OK, I think I'm in menopause. And luckily, I had a female GP. So she put me on a form of HRT, but she gave me estrogen. Now, I've since found out, of course, because I then went private because it wasn't working for me and it sent me Dulally. Yeah. I've since found out that what I needed was progesterone, like a lot of women do. And I already had plenty of estrogen. So up until last year, I had plenty of eggs, was having periods, and my estrogen levels were high. They were called high. This year, they're on the floor, like my shop is closed. But the NHS put me on estrogen. My boobs were so sore and swollen that I had to stay off work. I couldn't go to the office. And my team know if I'm not in the office, something is really wrong. I was bleeding really heavily. And so two friends of mine who had been individually for separate things said, you need to speak to someone at somewhere like the London Hormone Clinic. They made me have very specific blood tests before I even had my first appointment so that you go to the appointment with your bloods done so they can diagnose you rather than having like 15 appointments just to get some diagnosis. And yeah, they basically said, this is at the beginning. You've got plenty of estrogen. You're adding more to the problem. You need progesterone. Stop taking it immediately. We'll give you this, da, 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 da. And ever since then, I've kind of been, I say sane, my version of sane at 51, whatever that means.
But it's a lot, isn't it? Your business is really blossoming. You've got teenagers in the house and you're going through this up and down of the whole hormone thing. What's your advice for other women going through that? Because it's the perfect storm for possible cataclysmic, either breakdown of family or breakdown of you or breakdown of marriage or breakdown of career, isn't it?
What I kind of always live by, which is look after yourself first.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not here to be a martyr. That kind of parent is no use to anyone, because if I'm not functioning, then the family doesn't function. I learned that early on. So take care of yourself first. I would definitely recommend giving up booze. It's not hard at all. And you feel so much better for it. I gave up caffeine. Again, just things like that, like decaf, no booze. And people think it sounds really boring, but actually it's not. It's much more fun because you're aware of everything and you take stuff in and you're never tired, that kind of horrible tired where you're hungover. And my productivity when I gave up booze went through the roof. I mean, I was already busy, but now I'm just like the ever ready bunny. I'm just like, okay, what else are we doing? Let's go. Mm-hmm. You know, I message my team and I say, I've had an idea. And they go, oh God.
They run for the hills.
What now?
Caroline, you meet so many women, or you speak to so many women, you interact with women constantly. You have done your whole career, really, haven't you, from shop floor and all your beauty work. Any sort of universal truths and concerns that women have that they share about maybe perhaps about aging, especially as we're into our 40s and 50s?
I do struggle with people who have a sort of public profile and don't like to talk about their age. I find that intensely hypocritical. I mean, Joan Collins, I kind of get. She's like 87 or something, you know, but by then, surely
she
you would
might
give it up
be
and just be like,
and she's so fabulous. Yeah. Like Cher.
Do you see what I mean? Like, why wouldn't you just go for it? Jane Fonda. What I don't like is the whole, she looks amazing, I feel so bad about myself because I don't look like that. My mum said something like that about Jane Fonda, and I said, Mum, she's had like 4 facelifts. No, really? I'm like, Mum, it's genetically and scientifically impossible for someone to look like that at that age. I'm not having a go at her. I'm just saying, let's not pretend it's anything other than great doctors. I'm not trying to take anything away from Jane Fonda. She obviously eats really well. She's always exercised. She's a phenomenal woman. And I've never heard her deny she's had work done. Don't get me wrong.
Is that what women mostly ask you? Do they mostly ask about aging? What's the kind of overriding
thing? Depends on their age. If they're older, it's aging and dark circles and pigmentation, because obviously that's when it starts to come out. If they're younger, it's pores, always pores. And I'm just I can't say I've ever noticed your pores?
No.
Do you have a mag mirror? And they say, yes, I use a mag mirror to do my makeup. And I'm like, bin it. Or just use it to pluck your beard when you're a bit older. Like, don't be looking in a mag mirror to look at your skin. The only person who should be looking in a mag mirror is a facialist or a doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no need. Of course your pores are going to look huge. You're in a mag mirror. So it depends on their age. But yeah, older women tend to talk about, you know, sagging. And the thing is, there's such a stigma around intervention. Yeah. A lot of them say, oh, I couldn't possibly have Botox or filler because they're worried about how they'll be judged. And I'm like, why? If you're that concerned about it, the only thing that will fix it is this. This cream will help the texture of your skin feel great, and this cream will help the tone. But there is nothing that can replace the fat in your cheeks that's now swimming around your chin. Nothing.
Or your knees, even. It's gone all the way down. We can't let you go without beauty advice for these two midlife women. So you're looking at me and Trish on the Zoom, the dreaded Zoom. What's your advice for two early 50s? We're still clinging in to the early 50s. Women and their skincare routine. Two very pale Celtic, I think we are.
Yes, I think so.
Irish and Cornish. What's your advice for us?
The gold standard for sort of anti-aging, and I hate that term, but until we have something that makes people immediately know what you mean, is sort of vitamin A. You can do wonders with a vitamin A, a retinoid, and a facial oil on top. You'll wake up glowing and be like, wow, I actually look quite hot. You know, that's what you want. You just want to look like the best version of yourself, you know?
Fish is on to the hot thing. She's been watching Bridgerton. It's tipped her over. I think that's her theme
of this episode is hot.
I swear to God, I was not expecting that.
Oh, you've been amazing, Caroline. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
Now we've reached the how to win at midlife section of the show, and this is where we bring you practical advice from an expert. So pen and paper at the ready, if you've got it around at the moment, because this is important. It's time to tackle something we often take for granted in midlife, and that's our relationship with our partners.
Yes, if you're married, living together, co-parenting, starting again in a new relationship, or even single and out there looking for love, we've asked an expert to talk us through the kind of quick ways that you can refresh your relationship mindset, whether you're in one or how you want to approach one. And I suppose it's a bit of a spring clean for your partnerships, really, isn't it, Lorraine?
Yes, I think even if you're in a long-term relationship or you're starting again, you maybe get into a rut of thinking around romance, don't you? So I've been married 20 and a bit years, Trish, but we've been together maybe 25, I would say. What about you?
Oh, I can actually beat you at that one. We've been married for 25 years in April, and we've been together for 34 years.
Where did you meet?
Brighton Poly, 1986.
Oh, on
walking across the campus. We sort of kept sort of eyeing each other up across the campus. And then I think it did actually happen in the student uni eventually. I know. Wasn't that exciting? It was 19. It was a baby.
Oh my goodness, you've been with Neil since you were 19. I haven't explored this before. I'm quite excited about this thread of our conversation.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, isn't it? Yeah, so no, we've ups and downs, of course, like everybody, but it sort of still works.
I thought I would speak to an expert rather than just you and me.
Jabbering on.
So I spoke to a relationship and parenting therapist, Dr. Kalanit Ben-Ari. She works out of her centre in North London. Now, she has over 20 years experience working with couples and families, and she has some very useful and easy to follow tips, which I think are particularly good for the time we're living in. And I hadn't really heard before, so I think they might be useful. So the first one that she mentioned to me is the daily check-in. Now, it sounds obvious, doesn't it? But first thing in the morning, ask, how can I be there for you today? How can I be there for you this week of your partner? Mm-hmm. You need to initiate this discussion yourself, and you need to do it with proper eye contact and take a moment to really listen to the answer. So what you're not doing is problem solving or fixing a diary, but actively listening to what your partner thinks and feels about what is happening. So what you're talking about is feelings, not facts. So it's appreciating them and connecting to them with kind of kindness and love. I hadn't really thought of saying, what can I do for you today in terms of anything more practical than what do you want for lunch? Would you like a cup of tea? Another cup of tea.
Can you put a loo roll in the toilet,
yes,
please?
Yes,
that kind of thing. Yeah.
And then this phrase she used, which I think is really good to sort of check in your own mind, you don't have to say it out loud, is you have to ask yourself, are you a source of safety and pleasure for your partner in this relationship? Can you truly say yes to that? I am definitely a source of safety and pleasure. If you can't truly say yes, then maybe think about the reasons why not. And this is good, Trish. No less.
Ooh.
So we think we know our partners in midlife, but do we know our partners? Because everything is changing. You've changed, they've changed, but you haven't really considered what else has changed in our lives. So we think we know them well, but perhaps we should think of we know them less because so much has changed. So you need to be a bit more curious, if you like, about them. Same kind of curiosity you were at the start when you didn't really know anything about them. So the focus would be what he is, not the focus of what he likes or what he wants. It's more about who is that person now? Assume you know less about them and be curious and find out more. Mm-hmm. And she also said that talking is dangerous. Listening is better.
Oh, listening.
Same with parenting, isn't it? It's all about listening. Asking more rather than talking is productive. And if you're going to talk, talk about you and your feelings, not how you feel about him. So a lot mm-hmm. of therapists say this, don't they? Don't argue from the kind of you did, you said, you were. Argue from the I feel, I think, I would like point of view, which I think, you know, it stops you blaming, it stops you shaming, and it makes you own your own feelings and experiences, doesn't mm-hmm. it? And eye language is very, very important. Ooh. Softer, calmer, more positive, gentler eye language.
Eye language, what's that then? How you look
looking
at, them.
At people,
looking at
properly.
Them, seeing people,
look at
seeing
me looking
people.
At
so
you and your glasses,
you're glaring at glasses. Me across the Zoom screen. But yeah, no, I think that's really nice. And it is, you're right, you forget how to talk to each other. You get caught up in the kind of day-to-day sort of life. Yes. And I think there's that thing as well about the reasons that I fell in love with him and I want to be with him are also the things that really annoy me sometimes.
Exactly.
Because it is that sort of, he's this very outgoing, loud, funny, he's got such a zest for life. He, nothing's a problem. He's like, oh, to hell with it. Whereas I'm obviously a bit more serious and considered. Opposite. I have no zest for life whatsoever. Obviously, sometimes that isn't appropriate, but it's just kind of like I had to kind of remind myself. And I think especially when you're going through like those child rearing years, which were so hard. And yeah. I do feel like I maybe perhaps, oh, it's like a therapy session, isn't it? Built up a bit of resentment because you start feeling like I am doing more. I am carrying more of the emotional stuff. I am physically doing more for the children. And he was sort of there, very present, very much doing things, but he still carried on with all his hobbies and all of his life and all that kind of thing.
But that's not his fault, is it?
It's not his fault, but I blamed him and I did sort of think it was his fault, but that was the kind of, because I wasn't seeing him and listening to him and checking in, and he wasn't doing that with me as well, probably.
So the other thing is to bring novelty to your life. So bring in new pleasures, new hobbies, new ideas. It's that idea at the end of the day, you've got something to talk about, isn't it? That you hadn't talked about a million times before. And this idea also of bringing in a new energy. So being a bit more upbeat, being a bit more positive.
Being a bit more Neil.
Yeah, we should all be a bit more Neil. And she also advises, I love this. I do this, actually. It's very annoying, I think, sometimes. But the high energy hello. Because I've noticed from all the teams I've managed that if you bring high energy in, eventually it's contagious. It catches on. Everybody starts to become jolly and cheerful. So, but it can be a surprise and it really changes the mood. So a big positive hello in the morning, I think is good. And then there is the slightly more tricky elephant in the room. So this is something you don't talk about. This is something that you may be avoiding talking about. So if you just keep, it's going to come out somewhere. That's what Callanette said to me. She said, it will come out. So you should just gently ask, I wonder why we're not talking about why you haven't blah, blah, blah. Bring it in and listen well, and it'll gradually be easier to discuss. Now, the other thing is, and we talk about this, Trish, don't we? We've gone really new agey today because we do this. Dreams and visions. What are your dreams and visions? Because in midlife, they totally change and they're so different when you get older. But could you talk them through? What are your dreams and visions for the day, the year, the family? Bring it into the conversation. I think that's a really good thing to do.
And you know, what's good for that is a dog walk, I find.
Do you find a dreams and vision dog walk?
Dreams, vision, dog walk. And I think dog walk in general, because we got the dog when the kids were about 13, maybe, when you can actually leave them at home and go for your dog walk, because they're not going to want to come with you. And we've just found that to be the time that we talk about dreams, plans, all of that kind of thing. It's a really nice moment to do it. It's almost like, because you're doing that side by side walk.
Like car journeys, we do that. Yeah,
exactly.
She does recommend two really good books, which I think are worth getting. Getting the Love You Want by Harville Hendricks. And this is the one you'll like, Trish. Hot Monogamy.
Oh, yes. Liking the sound of
Patricia
that.
Love and Joe Robinson.
Patricia Love, that could be my new name, because I'm Patricia. Now, worth saying that obviously in these podcasts, we sort of do recommend lots of things, lots of people, lots of podcasts, lots of books. And now we are going to be listing these each week on the Facebook group. So every Sunday, we put up a post about the this week's podcast. And on there, you will find a list of all of these links and connections. Yeah. So if you haven't joined the Facebook group, now's your chance to do it.
Yes, because we know that you are either in a car or on a walk when you're listening to this, and it's quite hard to jot down or remember what we're telling you. So we thought we'd be helpful journalists, because mm-hmm. we are trained helpful journalists, and put it all in a list for you so that you have something to refer to. Right, Trish, are you ready for a little nostalgia noodle, a little trip back down memory lane?
I love our little trips down memory lane.
Shall I tell you what I've discovered?
Go on.
Something I want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know what I'm like. I have found a retro shoe.
Right.
So it's gone away and it's come back and then it's gone away and then it's come back mm-hmm. again. So do you remember, you might not remember these, but they're brilliant, the Candies. Quite like the name, you see.
Is that the connection? Is it a family business?
No, they were called the Candies and they were little wooden heels. They were kind of like shawls with a heel.
Right. I don't know how anyone ever wore a shawl without.
No, well, so I don't want to talk about shawls because there should have been a fashion intervention with them. But the Candies have, they're quite cute. They're kind of probably came before the wedge, but they were a 70s shoe that were massive in the 90s. And they're starting to come back again for spring. Oh. Now, I guess you would sort of call them boho. They're the kind of thing you wear with a flared jean. Mm. Anyway, what was fabulous about them in my nostalgia noodling was quite extraordinary. Is I looked at the advertising campaign for the Candies in the late 90s, 1996, starring Jenny McCarthy, the beautiful blonde supermodel. Basically, it's a picture of her on the toilet, on the actual toilet, with her pants around her ankles, reading the newspaper, wearing her Candies.
Yes, now it's all coming back to me. Yeah, that actual image. So
what
bizarre.
Do you think was going... So do you think that was perhaps a group of men in a room thinking
maybe.
This is the way to advertise some cute wooden shoes?
Yes. And
put that girl on the toilet.
It's very strange. I think what else is strange is your ongoing toilet theme for this episode.
Yes.
Starting with the loo roll.
This is lockdown for you, isn't it? The lavatory is the room that's annoying me the most.
Oh,
during lockdown.
Well, I went into the bathroom, not the toilet, the bathroom for my nostalgia noodle, or maybe the dressing table. Oh, we're talking 1980s here. So mine is Country Born hair gel. And I don't know really, it was a thing. And the reason I know it was a thing was I was out on a socially distanced walk with my friend Lara last week, and she mentioned it. And I was like, I didn't think anybody else knew about it. And it was this hair gel that it was in a glass jar. It was the first time I'd ever discovered hair gel.
Yeah, I remember this.
Did you remember? Yeah, glass jar, green, a bit like slime. Country Born, a really, really nice smell. And I had this like just, this is it. This is going to make me fabulous. This is like when you're 14 and, you know, I had this awful haircut and I thought, right, I can sort of gel it and I can make it spiky and punky and look really, really cool. And of course it just made it a bit sticky. Didn't make it stick up.
It used to get stuck to everything, didn't it? The whole of your top of your thing, everything.
Oh, but I did like the smell. And it also made me recollect this at the same time, this sort of thing at school where there's this gorgeous girl called Carol Barnes. She was so pretty and perfect, a lovely little bob and dewy skin and big eyes. And she went
home. It's gone Joan and Jerrica on us now, look.
She went home on a Friday like that.
Carol did.
Carol came back on Monday morning with a proper, practically Mohican spiky hair and big black eyeliner. And I think that was something more than Country Born gel, because it was
the power of Country Born gel to transform a woman. Thank you for that, Trish.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Postcards from Midlife. Thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed it, please do tell your friends and all the midlife women you know. And remember to subscribe on your podcast provider and rate and review us too.
And don't forget to join us on our Facebook group or on Instagram. Or you can email us too at hello@postcardsfrommidlife.com.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.